All right, hi everybody. Welcome back to another edition of It's Brewin' at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. I'm here today with two of my co-hosts, John Kaplan and Adam Cartwright. It's both their first shows of the season. How are you guys doing?
I'll go ahead. Doing pretty. Tried to hand that off, but no, I'm doing pretty well.
We're still in spring training over here.
Exactly. We're trying to work all this out. Doing good. Very cold down here in Florida. A little unnaturally cold for some of us. I'm sure, like you said, well, like we were talking about earlier, that's not news for John. But really excited about some baseball, man. All the podcasts around the country are starting to pick up. College baseball coverage has really picked up over the last couple of years, and that's really, really, really awesome for fans like us, you know. And yeah, just ready to kind of look at what we're gonna have coming up on our slate and get this thing going.
Sorry about the awkward pause, fellas. No, we're doing about the same over here. In the past week, I had to spend the night at the hospital because we had a winter storm, and with that, I got to experience negative temperatures for the first time in my life. That was fun. But yeah, no, it's kind
Pass.
of yeah, right,
Yeah.
exactly. It's kind of chilling out of late, pun intended, but. No, I'm also looking forward to baseball. You know, it's starting to ramp up, like Adam said. And one of my biggest things going into this season is that the Americans trying to become like a premier mid-major to have multi-bid to become a multi-bid conference. So as a mid-major, so I'm really looking forward to see if those contenders from last year continue to progress.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we're actually going to be talking about today. That is really the whole purpose of today's show, is to do a preview on our conference as a whole. And as John mentioned, if you are a USF baseball fan, you have to be a fan of the other nine teams in this league when you're not playing them. And the reason for that is you want to see this league be the best mid-major league, maybe even surpass a Power Four conference or two, because that's going to result in more bids to the NCAA tournament for USF, opportunities for USF. So it's very competitive out there. I mean, I think in Division One baseball, there's about 30 different conferences, maybe more. And you know, you've got the Power Two, Power Four that you know from football, but there are surprisingly other conferences that are truly powerful in baseball, such as the Sun Belt, get themselves three to four bids per year, and there's no reason why the AAC shouldn't track like that. So what we're going to do is count down from the preseason poll, 10 through 1. We're not necessarily going to go in order. We're more going to focus on the teams that were projected in the bottom five first, and then we'll focus on the teams that were projected in the top five. You're probably not going to hear too much about the bowls today. We're going to save that for next week's show, where we're going to have head coach Mitch Hanna's on with us, and we're going to talk to him about what he's been seeing from the guys in these spring practices here. And it'll, when we talk to him next week, that'll only be about 3 to 4 days before opening day. So he'll probably be able to share a lot of good information about lineups and pitching rotations. So very excited for that. So we are obviously a USF baseball show, and there'll be plenty of talk on that. But the conversation today is highly relevant to the Bulls, as we'll be playing against all these teams during conference play and rooting for all of them during non-conference play. So with that kind of background, I'll kind of read through the conference poll real quick, just so you know which teams that we're going to be referring to. So the preseason number one was ECU, preseason number two, UTSA, number three, Charlotte, number four, Tulane, number five, USF, number six, FAU, number seven, Rice, number eight, Wichita State, number nine, Memphis, and number 10, UAB. So from that bottom six through 10, we're going to talk about those teams first before we turn it to the projected upper half of the league. So with that, I'll kick it to Adam. And which team from this 6 through 10 would you like to start with?
We're going to start with the Wichita State Shockers. Wichita State is led by Brian Green. He's going to be in his third season this year. He's collected a 301, 263, and one record. Again, he's had stops at New Mexico State University as well as Washington State before making his way to Wichita State. Did take that New Mexico State to a regional in 2018. Has not gone very well for him for these first couple of years at Wichita State. They've been young. They've had turnover. They've had more turnover. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But just before we get to that, their record was 20-36. They were 11-16. They did sneak their way into the American Athletic Tournament, placing sixth, or I'm sorry, seventh there. They were one of those three teams that kind of went into that last weekend, not really knowing what was going to happen, and they kind of found their way out of it. Speaking of roster turnover, they're going to have 31 new players on this roster. Again, there's only 38 players, so only seven
Jeez.
returners. Yeah, and what's interesting about this too is it's going to feature 15 seniors and 19 juniors, 4-year transfers, JUCO newcomers. But again, no matter how you look at it, there is a lot of older talent players on this roster. You know, I think everybody, the hot topic as we move into the season has been, you know, what can be the X version of Indiana, right? Of what's happening. Well, one of the things that Indiana did was they got a whole bunch of old players. And that's how that kind of sparked their turnaround. And I think that's what Wichita State and Coach Green is trying to do right here. They're trying to bring in a lot of old talent. Again, there's 31 new players and they're all veterans. And so I don't really know what we can expect out of them because of that. It's kind of a mixed bag. They could kind of not necessarily gel, but then they could, you know, use all of that veteran experience and really actually be pretty tough this year. The one true freshman they are bringing, however, is a big deal. His name is Ethan Rogers. And D1 baseball has actually identified him as the number one freshman pitcher in the American. So he's coming in with a lot of you know of hype. You know, so they're going to expect a lot out of him. Not sure where he'll actually, you know, shape in their rotation. I'm sure they're expecting that to be in the weekend somewhere. You know, if he shapes out like everyone expects, maybe even that Friday role. It could be interesting though for the Wichita State Shockers. Again, just so many old players, juniors and seniors. You look at their you look at their schedule. They've got midweeks against Kansas State and Oklahoma State, so that offers some opportunities to maybe boost their RPI. I know they're expecting big things out of Oklahoma State, so if Wichita can steal that midweek, that can be really big for the conference. Also got a marquee conference against Georgia, or I'm sorry, that's West Georgia, never mind. That really deflated that. Do apologize. It did shock me. I was like, I did not see a Georgia series, and I realized that it was just a bad spacing. Do have to play Hawaii. I'm not sure if that's home or away, but if you have to go to the
Oh
island,
wow,
that's always tough.
it's at Hawaii.
It's at Hawaii.
Hey,
That is always tough to go to the island and play them, I promise.
they'll
Football,
take.
baseball, I don't care what it is.
Man, they're making the most out of that. Looks like they're gonna play five games over there, which honestly, I can't blame them if
Exactly. Wouldn't you?
you fly that far.
You kind of have to, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Well, that's
Dang.
what I got on them, guys. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, Wichita State is like a it's they're a really good example of what I've been saying about AAC baseball, where it's like you have a historical program that's done a lot of great things. But they're not necessarily that relevant recently. Like Wichita State has been to Omaha. They may have even won a national championship in baseball. I think they did. But like it's a very accomplished program. Their stadium's cool. I think like a couple of years ago we talked to some of the players that went there and they thought it was a pretty cool experience to play there.
Their facilities are so dope.
Yeah, it's cool.
Every time
Like
I like them.
They're cool. They have a lot of things going for them as a program. But you know, it's just a matter of will they get back to their winning ways? This coach in his first 2 years hasn't quite brought it to that level yet, but to be determined. But yeah, that's Wichita State. I was going to talk about another team here that is projected towards the bottom of the conference, but they're a team that is consistently pretty good. This is the FAU Owls. So they are under head coach John McCormick, who is he's been there for a while. He's actually spent his entire baseball career in South Florida. He played at Lynn University, which is in Boca. He was an FAU assistant for about 19 to 20 years. And then in 2009, he became the head coach, and he's still the head coach today. So he's literally spent his entire playing coaching career in that Boca Raton area. But he's been really successful. I mean, I remember even as a kid, I grew up in South Florida. I would go sometimes to FAU baseball games. They were a really good program in the early 2000s, probably before he was the head coach. But even since he's become the head coach, they've had a lot of success under Coach McCormack. They've won five conference titles. Those were in the Sun Belt and in the Conference USA. Last year was only their second year in the AAC, along, joining the Bulls. But McCormack has taken them to six NCAA tournaments. But one thing that kind of stands out with them is they haven't been to the NCAA tournament since 2019. And that is really something that kind of aligns with what we've been seeing with the AAC, where you have these teams that are solid, but they're not necessarily good enough to get those NCAA bids. And if you look at the recent RPI finishes for FAU, you can kind of see why. Between the years of like 2021 and 2025, it seems like they always finish between like 58, 85, which is great. You're like in the upper 25% of the country, but you're not really going to get an at-large bid unless you're top 40 or inside the top 40. Do something like UTSA did last year, where they were number 17, or East Carolina always seems to pull it off. But FAU is consistently good. Last year, they finished fourth in the AAC. They finished number 65 in the RPI, pretty close to where the Bulls were. They definitely seem to be on an upward trend. But the one last thing I'll say about them is they got absolutely ravaged by the transfer portal. They had an incredible freshman pitcher last year, Trey Beard. I think he won Pitcher of the Year for the conference, and he got scooped up by FSU in the portal. And then you had a guy that was batting like 450 all season before he got hurt. That's Jake Duer. And Jake Duer transferred to Texas A&M. And then they had their best relief pitcher transferred to Texas A&M also. So, I mean, they had some absolute studs last season, but they do return some studs, actually. They are bringing back, they're bringing back Brando LaRue, who's a preseason All-AAC, and Marshall Lipsey, who's also a preseason All-AAC. So they have some pretty good talent still residing there, but it's to be seen if they will actually, level up the way they've been trying to make their first tournament since 2019.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, the transfer portal really got them. It comes down to just what we can offer versus what's the opportunities that an FSU can offer, in the ACC, which is, I look at baseball as really having a Power Three conference. When you look at the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, the Big 10 doesn't really kind of match up after the first couple of teams, but. The ACC is a really, really big time conference for big time college baseball, and they can offer that experience as long as probably some more financial benefits across the board. And when you're a G5 team, sometimes you just got to make some decisions that just doesn't work out for you.
Yeah, I think for FAU, it's really they want to break through and get back to the NCAA tournament. I mean, that coach clearly knows how to do it. He's done it six times, but the NIL transfer portal era is definitely bringing about new challenges. So if they can make it back, that would be good to see for the conference, for that program. But it's always a good matchup when the Bulls pair up with FAU. But I'll kick it to John to talk about the team he's covering here in the bottom five.
Yeah, so this team does not share that quality of being like a very notable baseball school in the American, unfortunately. Prominent school in UAB, but they don't quite have the baseball history of the Rice or Wichita State of the American. But no, they're gonna be kind of a wait and see team for me. Last year, they had a few capable arms in their rotation. They ran into some trouble when we got them deep in the bullpen, if I can remember correctly. They had a lefty that shut us down pretty good. That left the rotation. Their top two starting pitchers are gone. They do have an incoming class or an incoming transfer class that it does consist of. It looks like two Power Four conference players that are going to be replenishing that weekend rotation because it's going to need a lot of help. That's redshirt junior Bradley Lofton and redshirt sophomore Hunter Hyatt. Last year, if y'all remember, they when we ran into trouble against them, they nickel and dimed us. They didn't hit the long ball. They didn't. But they hit the gaps and they could do so 1 through 9, you know, when they were hitting well. And they played well at home, if y'all remember. But two of the biggest names that they had on offense, one got drafted in the 13th round to Atlanta, and the other one is over with Eric Snow in Auburn now. Todd Clay, I think, is over in Auburn, and then Logan Braunschweig.
Remember that name, yeah.
He was a dog. Both of them were actually really good.
Yeah.
They tore us up last year, but like I said, they've got a big transfer class coming in. You know, they've got Casey Dunn in his 5th year as the UAB head coach, but he was a legend at a pretty decent baseball program in Samford and SoCon. He was 17-year head coach there, winning his head coach in Samford baseball history. So, when you put a good coach at the helm, anything can happen, as we're seeing in Tampa, Florida. So, like I said, it's going to be a wait and see approach for UAB, but I'm predicting a sweep.
Yeah, I would love to see that. But you're right. I mean, that they played us pretty tough last year. Like, I was actually kind of surprised when I saw they were number 10 in the preseason poll because I was like, if I recall, like they looked pretty good. But you're right, they didn't really have big bats at all. They kind of they, I checked that they had the least amount of home runs in the conference, so that really kind of checks out. But yeah, that coach Casey Dunn, I mean, he was at Samford for a while. Like, he was there for like 10, 12, 14 years.
Seven.
Took them to multiple NCAA tournaments. Won the conference there a few times. Like, that guy is definitely a good coach. And you just and it's the same thing I wonder with John McCormack and maybe even this coach is you look at a lot of their like key success, like when they were getting to NCAA tournaments. Was before the transfer portal NIL era. And it just makes you wonder, like, are some of these guys struggling to adapt to the modern day environment? And it is hard because if you think about like the team FAU had last year with Jake Duer and Trey Beard, like before the portal, like they would just easily keep those guys. Like Trey Beard wouldn't he wouldn't want to sit out for a whole year and not play baseball for a whole year.
I feel like there's a lot more loyalty in college baseball, and I have my own opinion on the NIL, but I'd like to hear what Adam thinks about what you just posed, Matt, in terms of retention of players or you know how well these legendary head coaches are performing since the NIL, because it's a new time, and that's something that Adam is very knowledgeable in for sure.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't go so far as to say I think there's more loyalty in baseball than the other sports. I think there's less money in baseball than the other sports. Especially in terms of, you think of a basketball roster, you only need about 15, so you really only need to pay so many, versus a baseball roster trying to fill about 35 spots. And again, that's on the third tier of money, not the upper end, and all that money is going to football. So again, it's a trickle down. But if the power schools want you,
Yeah, they
they
can get
can get you.
you.
LSU gets whoever they want. Florida State goes and gets Trey Beard. And so that's what it comes down to. I think some schools, I think USF does better.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But I think when you look at USF on the broad scale of group of five, spending, we're at the top. We're up there with Memphis. I don't think Memphis is committed to baseball. I think they're much more committed to basketball. And so I think that's an issue with why you're not seeing the Memphis baseball program. But that's a stroke of the check, and that gets you in.
It's
So
just
yeah, that's my thought on that. I don't know that
because
there's more loyalty per se, but I do believe there's less money.
yeah, I think money kind of drives everything, and I think there is it's more like it seems to be a smaller select group of schools in college baseball that are really like flexing their muscle. If you look at like Florida State, like they almost view all the other college baseball teams in Florida as like the teams that they can just
Yeah.
butter. I mean, that's how they got that team a couple
Yeah.
years ago that made it so far in Omaha. They took the best shortstop from UCF, they took the best shortstop from UNF, and that became like those their middle infielders. It's like, I mean, but that doesn't mean that there's no excuse, because if you're in the AAC, every single team in the AAC has to deal with this. So what I'm saying is, I think the coaches that are able to adapt to the modern environment, which I feel personally, like I know we're not talking about our own team that much on this show, but I feel like we've adapted to that very well. I feel like we've been able to retain a good amount of talent. I feel like we're recruiting at a high level, and I think that could really show itself this season, especially second year of Coach Hanna's and the work that this coaching staff has put in for recruiting. I mean, I'm really impressed. Like, the more I research like who we have on the roster and have brought in, and then doing this today, the past couple of days, researching some of these other teams, like I feel like we've recruited at a higher level. Now it's just a matter of the product, on the field just being above everybody else. But the top teams in our league are pretty good with that as well. So we'll talk about them too.
Yeah, and just one final note on this. I think one thing that really benefits baseball in this era is that when you look at just the whole sport from the top to bottom, I think, NIA, JUCO, D2, D3, there's good players across the board. I think the jump to go from NIA to D2 into D1 is less than the jump to do that in, say, football or basketball. And so I think when you look at the way that things move, I think it's easier for these G5 teams to. Again, you're poaching another program.
Yeah,
It just trickles
exactly.
down.
You're right.
That
It's
that's
you're
all this
right.
really is,
You're
and
right.
it
I
is what
mean,
it is.
it, yeah,
But
it's just a different environment. I mean, you're right, because if you think about it, one of our best pitchers last year we got from Division Two, and one of our best projected pitchers of this year we're getting from Division Two. So I mean, you're right. It's just a different environment. But like I said, I feel like we're adapting well. Like, we realize, hey, we don't have to just be a farm team for other people. These schools at lower levels can be farm teams for us. So it's just, I'm really happy to see that our coaching staff is like doing well with the current environment. But Matt, what is the team here in the bottom five that you were going to cover?
Yeah, so I took a deep dive into Memphis, and a couple of things that really stood out to me were their overall focus on graduate students and upperclassmen on their roster, as well as overall roster retention. I know it's a topic you guys just covered, but Memphis, even though they weren't very successful last year, they were able to keep 18 players from their 2025 squad. So there's definitely some good continuity, and I think that's important, especially considering it's Coach Reiser's third season and
Third seasons for coaches are extremely important, and it seems like his roster is really stable in terms of the overall retention and also having those upperclassmen. In particular, they have some really standout players, Shane Cox, as well as Braden Sanders, who's a pitcher. Shane Cox, he's an infielder, and he and both Braden Sanders were named to the American preseason all-conference team. So Shane Cox had a really strong year last year as an infielder. He batted 286 with 31 RBIs and 8 stolen bases. And Braden Sanders led the AAC with 9 overall saves in 2024. So, he's going to be a graduate student. Shane Cox is a graduate student. They also have some veteran infield stability with Jevon Hernandez and also Freddy Rodriguez, who is an infield senior. So across the whole entire roster, they got guys with a lot of really strong experience. And I think the overall continuity of, Coach Reiser and being able to keep these players is going to really see them take that step up, even though they were only, picked 9th in the overall conference.
Yeah. One thing I'll add, Matt, is as you were kind of talking about the coach and some of the players, I was just looking at last season and where the team as a whole finished in batting and in pitching. And they actually finished fourth place in the conference in ERA. So their pitching was actually pretty decent. Their issue was actually their hitting. They finished with a 244 team batting average, which was last in the conference. But it sounds like you said they are bringing back an all conference second baseman, and perhaps they bring in some more talent offensively to kind of match the fact that they have a pretty solid pitching staff that could help them out. But yeah, that guy also is a good coach with a good track record. He came over from Southeastern Louisiana, where he took that program to four NCAA tournaments over the span of about 10 years. So I mean, he's a good coach too. I mean, you have a lot of good coaches in this league. But yeah.
Yeah, and to add on to that, not only are they relying on, senior guys and veterans, they also did pretty good with high school recruiting. They got Gabe Boyd, who's a shortstop. He was ranked 213th nationally. They also have a guy with a lot of upside. His name's Aiden Stett, and he's a 6'3", 203-pound freshman coming in as well. And additionally, they made a really big impact on their coaching staff this offseason. They added a guy named Julius McDougall. And one of the reasons why they brought him in is his expertise with situational hitting and overall defensive positioning and overall the analytics side of things as well. So he also has some head coaching experience, which I think is really going to help Matt Reiser's staff, continue their progress.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, one name too. I don't know if you guys mentioned Seth Garner for Memphis. He's a senior right-handed pitcher. I remember talking about him coming in as a freshman. He was a former Mr. Tennessee baseball. He hasn't panned out quite like they thought that he would, but he has made 20 over 20 plus starts. He's also made 10 plus appearances out of the bullpen. So he's got experiences up and down that staff. He's also a senior. You talk about the veteran leadership. I think that's something that could really help them. And they're going to be looking for him to really take a step forward. And if he does, and we might be saying this a lot, but Memphis could be a team that can be really good.
Yeah, and just to add on to that as well, he was the re he's the returning innings leader too for Memphis. So that's a big part of their overall pitching staff that, like you said, Mark, they finished 4th last year in conference. So definitely, if they see progress in terms of their development, there's a good chance that they'll finish well above 9th when it's all said and done. And another guy I wanted to bring up as well is a guy, James Smith the fourth. He's also a right-handed pitcher. He actually got selected in the 2025 MLB draft, but he decided to return to school. So that's another, big retention for Coach Reiser.
Wow, I didn't know he came back, actually. That's interesting. He was the guy that we actually saw when the Bulls were playing them. He was playing center field and he was chasing down a ball and he had a season-ending injury on that play. He is actually a very interesting two-way prospect. He's a right-handed pitcher and an outfielder. He's 6'6", 190 pounds. But yeah, he got drafted, like you said, in the 14th round by the Mets, but he decided to come back to school, which man, that's interesting because he knows that if he would have not got hurt and had a fully healthy season, he probably could have been like a top 5 round pick. He has that much talent. So honestly, I'm just excited to see him play in the AAC because I mean he's a huge talent. And I'm glad that he's gonna be healthy returning from that bad injury that actually he got against USF. So, wow, I did not know he's back. So that's interesting. But I think that's it on Memphis. I think we have one more team here in the bottom five, and that would be Rice. Adam, do you have anything to share on them?
Yeah, we'll talk about Rice. Rice is one of those programs you mentioned with the history. They've been to seven College World Series tournaments. They went to three straight from 2006 to 2008. They were the champions in 2003. So they've got that type of history, that prestige, and their coach has a little bit of that himself. It's David Pierce. He's got a career record of 507 and 293. He's had stops at Sam Houston State, Tulane, and Texas. And I want to point out he's won a conference championship at every stop. And that includes 11 NCAA tournaments, four super regionals, three College World Series appearances, three Big 12 regular season titles. He won the AAC regular season title with Tulane. It was one of their first seasons in before he made the jump to Texas. Got three Southland regular season champions. He was Baseball America Coach of the Year, two-time Big 12 Coach of the Year, two-time Southland Coach of the Year, two-time ABCA Regional Coach of the Year. He took this program over mid-season last season.
Never
And
seen that
yeah,
before. Never seen
no,
that
and it really was. It was a bit
Yeah, it
unprecedented
was.
in itself, but when you read that resume, you understand why Rice makes a move like that, right? They don't wait to the end of the year. He's available. They went and they got him. Again, they started poorly last season, 4-18, before they made the move to go to David Pierce, where they made a lot of strides moving forward. Unfortunately, they do lose Blaine Brown, who was our leading hitter from last season. He's moved on to Tennessee, as well as Davion Hickson, who was in the transfer portal, ended up getting drafted. He's with the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. However, they do return Landon West and Hiram Bokina Jr., who stats might not jump out at you, but USF fans need to remember because he had some really good games against the Bulls, a scrappy little infielder. But much like Wichita State, they have got a roster kind of overhaul. He went right in. You would expect that.
Makes sense.
He inherited a roster, so he
Makes
went
total
in.
sense.
And he went and brought in again 22 new names. So even at that, it's not as much as Wichita State's, but there is a healthy mixture in this. I don't think it's as much as the supercharge that I think Wichita State is trying to do. I think what Coach Pierce is trying to do here is really build a culture and a program back at Rice, which is a place that he was an assistant before. I didn't read off his assistants, but I think he was a part of the national championship staff for Rice. Don't quote me. Anyways, when I talk about this healthy mix, you've got Power Four programs represented with Texas Tech, Mississippi State, Duke, TCU, as well as junior colleges, Weatherford colleges, and then there's a healthy mix of high school kids. And I really want to start with the high school kids because it's really impressive what he was able to do with his freshman class. There's two kids coming in that are above 90. So you've got Ethan Rivers, who was throwing a fastball up to 93, and Parker Mitzel, who's reaching up to 95. So these are two freshman kids that are coming in with elite fastball talent. You're going to mix that in with some transfers, like I talked about from TCU, and Jax Traeger is a pitcher, as well as there was one more. Cannot find his name, but he was from an SEC school. So again, there's a mix of veteran. You've got Garrett Bohm from Texas Tech, who's going to come in and kind of be at the top of the order. again, trying to add some leadership there. Another interesting part, though, to this is he brought back Lance Berkman is going to work as a special assistant on this coaching staff. Again, Rice legend, another player. I believe he was a player on that 2003 national championship squad. And so, yeah, I really think, it's going to be interesting, but I don't know that we're going to get a chance to do it because next week we talk to Coach Hannes, and after that we're right into baseball's reviews and previews. But I think if I've got a hot take right now is that Rice has a real chance to go. I don't think they were worse last year. Were they bottom? Did they end up?
Yeah, they I'm sure they were definitely like
They
bottom.
were 8 or 9, but I think they're going to be they're going to go bottom three to top three this year. I can say that right now. I just believe with what they're bringing in, with what David, I read off David Pierce's resume. He knows what he's doing. And he overhauled this roster. We talked about the NIL and the transfer portal. It allows you to do that, to overhaul this the roster. And again, I think he did it very healthily with a healthy mix. It wasn't just a supercharge. They might stumble out the gate, but I think when we get to tournament time, this is going to be a team you don't want to see.
I hate to say you're right, but you're probably right. But actually, I don't hate it because I want the AAC to be good. So I actually like it. I like it. I like the fact that David Pierce is in this conference because he's a great coach. I actually saw him coach against USF in 2021 when Matt and I went to Austin, Texas for the Super Regional. That was his Texas Longhorn team that he was leading that beat the Bulls in that Super Regional to go to Omaha. He's a great coach. I mean, Texas has some interesting standards with their baseball. I guess they hadn't won a national championship recently enough, so they had to bring in Mr. Schlossnagel, who lost a regional last year to AAC's team UTSA. But I mean, it's good that David Pierce is in the AAC. I mean, we want this to be the best league possible. We want multiple bids, and his presence definitely increases the chances of that.
If I've got a knock on this, and it is to your point, it's about getting these multiple bid leagues in. It's going to be Rice's schedule. Their midweek opponents, Houston, Louisiana, Sam Houston, not really much to write home. I'm sure
Not
there's
much
more there, but I'm
opportunity.
just, these are the marquee, these are the kind of the marquees. You look at USC, Grand Canyon, and Harvard as your marquee series. There's not a lot of room for error there. So you're going to need to be in that 42 to 45 win range to kind of be one of those teams that's and again, that's a lot of wins in conference as well. So you don't like it from that standpoint, but if they run it, they're going to, they got to run it. But yeah, I just wish we had at least a marquee series or a couple good midweeks in there.
All right, well, that is rounds out our preseason coaches poll bottom five teams. We have four more teams to discuss here for a little bit. We're going to be talking about preseason projected number one, East Carolina, preseason projected number two, UTSA. Number three was Charlotte, and I think Tulane was number four. So I'll pick the next one here. I'll talk a little bit about UTSA since we just kind of mentioned them a little bit, and then the fact that they won the Austin Regional last year to make it to a Super Regional for the first time in school history, in which I believe they lost that Super Regional to UCLA out there in Los Angeles. But they had a great season, and man, they were just a really interesting team to see. I think they came to the Tampa last year, and we got to see them in person for a couple of games, and they were just impressive, man. Like, they really just hit the crap out of the ball. That lineup last year was just insane. And as I was doing my research on them, I was actually surprised at how many of the players from last year's team are actually coming back. It's actually very impressive. Yes, they lost their stud, Mason Lytle, to the draft. Obviously, we all knew he was going to get drafted. But a lot of other, they didn't really lose any like key producers in the transfer portal, which is really remarkable because I'm not really knowing UTSA to like have some gigantic NIL budget. They just did a really good job with retention of their stars. So they are bringing back a good amount of players from last year's team. Their head coach is Pat Hallmark, who's in his 7th year there. Last year was his first year of I think taking them to a regional and even winning it too. But he has a really good track record. His career as a head coach is 614 winning percentage. He also coached at Incarnate Word, which is another school over there in Texas. But the characteristics of UTSA baseball that you'll notice year in, year out under Coach Hallmark, a hallmark of a Coach Hallmark team is that they do not walk people. They will consistently pound the strike zone. Like that is just their MO. Last year, they had the second to least walks in the conference. And the year before that, they had the least amount of walks in the conference. And shout out to the Bulls for having the least amount of walks in the conference last year. That was really good. Shout out to Coach Schlereth. But they always have really good control. Like I said, their lineup last year was incredible. 913 team OPS was the top. But yeah, I mean they have a good core of returning players, and I wouldn't expect anything less for them than to be competing to win the conference again. I mean, it's pretty straightforward with them.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens with Robert Orlowski. I think he was their kind of their super reliever last year. He would come in for multiple appearances, multiple innings, kind of be a Mr. Everything in the back end of games. Is he going to jump into that weekend rotation? And how does he look in that role? Is he the same guy? Or does he fall back in? Again,
I thought
he
he
was very effective for them.
he's still there.
He's still there.
I told you,
Yeah.
bro, they retained all their stars. It's crazy.
I really thought he went to an SEC school for some reason.
Nope, he's back. I
That's
actually saw a quote in the fall report from D1 Baseball that he definitely is going to be either the Friday or Saturday starter.
yeah, he's getting a lot. He was getting a lot of hype.
If I'm not mistaken, we saw him go like multiple inning outings in the tournament.
Yes. Yeah,
So
that's what he does. He just basically like will come in twice per weekend, go 3 to 4 innings each time, but I don't
he
think they're
would
going
pitch
to do that
seven
anymore.
innings in a weekend. He just didn't know when it was going to happen.
He's
Which, look, if you're a coach and you have that,
that's a
I mean, yeah,
yeah, it's a weapon. Yeah, that's a big
it also
weapon.
means you have a surplus of starters, but.
And they actually are bringing back, I think, one of their weekend. That's maybe one part that's a weakness for them, is they're bringing back one out of the 3 weekend starters from last season. So that one guy is coming back. He'll be in the rotation again. I think it's Connor Miles, and then Orlovsky will slot in. And then they got to figure out that third spot. But they have, some all-conference, preseason all-conference outfielder, Drew Detlefsen, preseason all-conference catcher, Andrew Stuckey, among with other good hitters as well. So I don't really expect any drop off from them. Before I did the research, I thought, oh yeah, they're definitely gonna have a drop off because all those studs probably got picked up by Texas A&M or something. Nope, they're still there. So good for them. But that is UTSA. John, you want to talk about Charlotte
I mean, want is a strong word, but yeah, I'll
little bit?
we can transition over to Charlotte. So I feel like I should go ahead and come in with this exclusive news break. I did go ahead and shoot a message to old Woody on Twitter.
Oh yeah, I forgot. That's your guy.
Yeah. And I asked him, I said, so listen, we're doing a preview of the conference teams and what to look out for this season. I said, is there a name that, people aren't talking about, maybe that you think we should know this year? And he responded with, nope, nobody good on our team this year. So that's official report from
Perfect.
Coach Woody out in Charlotte. Now, let me start with Woody. We gave him a lot of flack on social media, and he definitely took note of that. But the way he coaches is like, it's completely analytical, and it's brilliant in my opinion. It's frustrating when you're on the other side of it. He's going into his 5th year, I believe, He's had 36 wins in three of his first 4 years. He started out with UNC, which is also where he pitched as a player. When you see him coach, he looks at the field like a chessboard, and while he experience he I would say Charlotte's biggest question mark right now, which if you know Woody at all, and if you know Charlotte at all, it's not going to be a question mark come 2 weeks into the season. It's their pitching rotation. Right now, there's been a lot of turnover. At the top of that list is Gillespie. But they've got so many new names that are coming in, and we know nothing about them, but I can almost guarantee you that we'll know plenty about them when we play them at the end of the season. I have zero doubt that they'll be able to pick up right where they left off as one of the conference's top 2 to 3 pitching teams in the conference. And then offensively, dude, they didn't they're not going to miss a single thing on offense. They've got Dawson Bryce coming back, who is your preseason AAC player of the year. He's their third baseman. He's corn fed, dude. 6'3", 200. He's a junior. He hits for power. He hits for average. Speaking of corn fed, you got Cody Gunderson, who's 6'4", 220, plays at the cor plays opposite of Dawson Bryce over at first base, does a little catching. And then you've also got a name like Spencer Nolan, who plays all over the field, 6'5", 190. He's a senior. So you've got a lot of kind of like Matt noted with one of his teams, you've got a lot of leadership coming back in offense, in the form of offense, which is going to be big because that's position players too, and they can really make or break your foundation of a team in terms of leadership. We saw a few key names for our Bulls come in and kind of on the run, really, really take that role as a leader, and it really paid dividends for us. But they've got some new names like Cole Strickland. I think he's going to get some first team looks at catcher. He's a transfer from Auburn this year. Another name that caught my eye was Robert Nedry. He is kind of a stud that is transferring over from Santa Fe College, and any people who follow baseball and Florida baseball closely knows that that's a feeder school for UF and a very prominent JUCO or state college for baseball. And also you've got Adrian Jimenez, who had a really good first season with VCU. So they did have some good transfer portal talent come over. And like I said, the new names in their rotation are gonna, I just have zero doubt that they're gonna pan out.
I got a fun nugget to add for you.
Please.
From the D1 baseball AAC preview, which just came out like this afternoon. Great, great timing. Thanks a lot,
Right?
guys. But everything you're saying is tracking though. You could have written the preview, so good job. But there's one thing that they mentioned here that's pretty interesting. They said like this program has had a lot of success getting transfer portal pitchers and turning them into aces, which is what they did with Gillespie last year, who transferred from University of Georgia. Well, they got a guy named Drew Munn now, who was the Friday night starter for Central Connecticut State last
Okay.
year, who made a regional. And apparently last year he was good, like a 5 ERA, 80 and two-thirds innings. And his fastball was averaging 89 miles an hour. But apparently, D1 Baseball's Joe Healy went to a fall scrimmage, saw this guy throwing 94 to 96 with natural cut, with a hard slider and a good splitter. Joe Healy thinks he has a chance to compete for American Conference Pitcher of the Year honors and vault up draft boards if he can sustain his stuff from the fall. So,
Woody.
what he did just didn't want to tell you about. He's trying to keep that a secret, but little does he know D1 baseball's dropping some gems there. But yeah, that's a little nugget to add to what you're saying. But
The minor details, that's
Minor
more okay.
detail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drew Munn. So hopefully we hear that name for the sake of the AAC, but hopefully when we do see that guy, we give him some hell. So
I did tell Woody that I was going to try to make the Charlotte series because it's probably the closest road game for me. It's towards the end of the season, so it's going to carry some weight. So I will open that invitation to any of you sickos that
That's
me out.
Friday. Is it a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series? Because last year it was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and we
Oh,
got
yeah.
robbed of the Gillespie Braun matchup because
Yeah, that's right.
coaches went off. They went off.
That's right. That's right.
I can't remember who kept it, but somebody kept their Friday night guy on Friday, and somebody didn't.
We kept ours on Friday, and
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I do love the city of Charlotte, so I'll definitely consider going to that.
yeah, my buddy just moved out there, so it's an excuse to go see him out there and have a place to stay when we take the sweep in Charlotte.
Nice.
Bold move, Cotton, but I'm going there.
All right, we got two more teams to cover here. I'm gonna let Matt talk about Tulane for a little bit, and then we'll let Adam wrap it up with ECU. But Matt, go ahead.
Awesome. With Tulane, obviously they have a great coach with Jay Ullman. He's done a really good job in terms of winning conference tournaments and getting to the NCAA tournament. But overall, when you look at this upcoming team, I think a couple of things that really stand out to me is they did lose some really big talent in the draft last year. A name that a lot of people will be familiar with is Michael Lombardi. Thankfully, he is no longer on Tulane. He got drafted in the second round by the Kansas City Royals. And they also lost Taylor Montiel to the Arizona Diamondbacks, as well as Connor Rasmussen. He got drafted in the 15th round, also by the Kansas City Royals. But overall, Tulane did a really good job in terms of adding guys through the transfer portal. They added 23 new players in total. 16 of those came through the portal. And they also got some JUCO guys and four true freshmen as well. But one of their big key returners for this upcoming season is, I'm going to butcher this name, it's Trey Khajic. He's a 6'8", 243-pound pitcher, and he was named to the preseason first team all-conference by Perfect Game. If you want to talk about corn-fed boys, that guy is corn-fed. Maybe they put some HGH in there or something, but that is a big man right there, and he's got some really good experience too. He pitched in 15 games last year with 13 starts, so he's got some really good talent there, and most likely will be their Friday night starter. But I wanted to dive into a little bit more of these transfers that they got because they really did a good job in getting some really talented guys. One of them is a right-handed pitcher, Owen Geis. He pitched at Long Beach State last year, and he was a 64 analytics top 15 class. Not exactly sure what that designation is, but definitely, sounds like he has some really good talent. And a couple other names to keep an eye out for is Jude Abadesa. He pitched at UConn last year, and he had a 2.59 ERA in the MLB Draft League. And additionally, they've also gotten some experience through the portal with Jack Frankel. He was a pitcher at Liberty last year, and he went 4-3 with a 3.4 ERA as a freshman. So they've added a lot of really good arms. Even they added a D3 All-American and Sam Larson. So I think that's going to be one of the areas that's really going to carry them in this upcoming season.
Yeah, really interested because Tulane found a lot of success with their back end bullpen with Mortiel and Lombardi, who was a two-way player, I believe, right? He played center field and then he pitched. They would bring him in, and then Mortiel would kind of work in off of him. I think they were kind of a left-right combo, and they were incredibly effective. I remember them coming in a couple days in a row in the tournament as Tulane was trying to make that run. that ended up getting stopped short by ECU. But interesting to see how they replaced that combo, because that was a real key part of their success last season.
Yeah, and on the offensive side of things, they are returning a really talented player, Jason Watts. He led the team with a 335 average, and he earned a unanimous selection to the 2025 All-Freshman team as well. So, obviously look for him to make some strides in his sophomore season. But additionally, they also got a couple other guys that were named to preseason second team all conference, and Matthew Haas. He's an infielder slash outfielder, also a graduate student as well. So a guy with some really strong experience there.
Yeah, I just want to add one last thing too, because some people might fact check me on Michael Lombardi, because the last time you saw him, he was throwing 7 innings in a start for the tournament. But again, he was a closer, and he shocked the world by coming in. Not necessarily world wasn't watching, but he shocked everybody that was paying attention when he came in and started. And everybody's like, "Oh, he's just opening." And then he pitched 2 innings, and then he pitched 3 innings, and then he pitched
Remember
four innings, and then it was like, "What is he gonna do?" And he ends
that.
up throwing seven, and everyone's like, "Wow." Tulane's got their whole staff right now, and that was a really special player for them. So I just wanted to
Yeah,
point that out.
he was.
Before we move on, is this an overreaction, or I'm sitting here listening to the projections of these teams, right? And then you hear the projections and the newcomers for a team like Tulane, who has the pedigree as well and the history and everything as a known baseball program, but then they're also replenishing a roster that was actually really good. They just underperformed last year, and I'm not even going to talk about 6'8". Like, are you kidding me?
Oh, I've got one coming too.
That's ridiculous, man.
Matt kind of stole
Ball
my thunder.
probably weighs like 10 pounds coming in. Like, that, I can't even imagine that hitting your bat. But we said we're not going to go there, so we won't go there. But overreaction or not, I think that the American is really poised to take a turn this year as a top three mid-major conference, like consistently all season long. And I don't think there's going to be much fluctuation, because I don't see a team like us or Charlotte, or really even ECU, experiencing that much joy,
Right.
you
No,
know.
you're right. That absolutely could happen. You could actually see the AAC take a big step forward as a conference, because now that we are kind of relevant again, that helps a ton. Because
Right.
that and the fact that Charlotte has stabilized, because they kind of had a down year the prior
Yep.
year, Tulane is pretty stable now. And now the ceiling for Rice is way above what it used to be with David Pierce.
You've got Adam saying Rice is going to be a top three team. We don't
Yeah,
have
I mean,
room for that in
I
section.
think
Like,
so. I do.
that's blowing
And
my mind a little.
I'm going to tell you though what the conference needs. Okay, and this is an elephant in the room. We're competing against the Sun Belt. The Sun Belt is considered the premier group of five conference, and the reason being, Coastal Carolina has won a World College World Series. They've been to, are they Sun Belt?
They have won a conference.
Yeah,
With, yeah,
but I don't think
they
they
are. They are Sun Belt. They are Sun Belt. Yeah,
right.
and
But
they
I
in
don't think they were
another.
Sun Belt when they won it, but they are
No, they
now.
weren't. They weren't. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
they are now. So, but they've been there. They've won it. Southern Miss has kind of flirted with the flute, the super regional stuff. We need to get a team through. A team
Yeah.
needs to break through, and they need to get to Omaha, and that's going to kind of change some of the
Yeah,
perspective.
that would change a lot. I mean, come on, even Murray State was in Omaha last year, and they're from the Missouri Valley Conference, which was like maybe the 10th or 12th best mid-major conference.
Yeah, it's very top heavy.
So, yeah, come on. Yeah.
I'm telling you
But
right now that Charlotte, if they don't win the conference, they will auto bid into the tournament.
well, the first month of the season is important.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that first month is huge, man. You got to get those non-conference
They have a
wins.
really strong non-con schedule too, so
Yeah.
that could go either way for them. Just like ours isn't as strong, like y'all talked about last week, that could break us, or it could really kind of boost us early. It could, like, I think Adam actually made that point separately in a text, and it's a really good point, because it really could shaft us if we don't perform coming out of the gates.
Well, that and you need you need teams to perform. You're like, we're gonna need Georgia Southern. You know, I think there were times last year they were flirting being a quad two team. They ended up being a quad three. We need them to be a quad two team. We need those two Big Ten teams we're playing. We need them to be in the top half of the Big Ten, not the bottom half. Because, like I said, the Big Ten in baseball, it isn't the same. It's not in that power kind of discussion like it is in football. And so we need them to be in the top half of that, not the bottom half.
I wanted to add something in here as well. So when Coastal Carolina ended up winning the whole thing, they were part of the Big South Conference, along with teams like High Point, Gardner Webb, USC Upstate, UNC Asheville. So, I
Jeez.
mean, if you think that, the possibility of them winning it all in the Sun Belt is like crazy, they were part of a conference with those teams. That's insane.
Little bit different era, but yes. That is it's something though, because I remember them pointing that out too when they brought it out about the Sun Belt too, or about the Big South too. Like, would that happen again? I was like, well, I don't know if that could happen now because, well, the teams like Coastal Carolina got sucked up by the Sun Belt. You know, there was the, you know, you even in the lower levels in the group of five, there was this vacuum. You look at the American, we picked up Wichita Rice, we brought in Tulane. You know what I'm saying? There was kind of this vacuum. But I guess kind of getting back to the point, somebody's got to break through. It can happen, but until we kind of get that team that can break through and go to Omaha, we're going to be looked at as a one big league that has a chance to be a two big league. And if we really do something amazing, we can get that three bid. But until we're not going to really get into that, hey, this is not a two bid league until we get a team, until we prove that we can get a team to Omaha. You
But
know,
on that note, let's talk about a team that has
that needs
been
that, yeah.
that needs to get to Omaha maybe more than
Elephant in the
anybody
room.
because of how close they've been so many times. Let's talk about East Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. Little bit of a friendly rivalry between USF and ECU, and so I kind of wanted to cover these guys, and also because I think they're getting a lot of preseason hype, even on the national level. Starting with the coach Cliff Godwin, 432, 214, and 1. He has only been at ECU. He's been there 11 seasons. I do want to point out one of those was COVID, right? And I point that out because he's been to 9 NCAA tournaments. So he's honestly only missed one in his coaching career. He's got 5 regular season AAC championships, 4 tournament championships, AAC tournament championships, won four, or I'm sorry, been to 4 super regionals, and has been the AAC coach of the year 5 times. As we pointed out, he knows how to kind of get on the door. He knows how to knock on the door. They have really got to kick it down. Last season was really a down season. They were 35 and 27, ended up 13 and 14, but they really turned it on late. And I think when you hear kind of my analysis for this season, you'll kind of understand why. But a huge postseason. I just want to cap it off by talking about Austin Irby. He had 10 hits in his regional. He had 7 RBIs in that regional. Again, it's only 4 games, guys, in that regional. And he's coming back, right? And which leads us into this preseason rank of number one, and why I really think even on a national level, I think ECU could be really, really good this season. They have no key losses that I found. They are bringing back Austin Irby that I talked about. His overall year was 303 OPS of 948, had 12 home runs, 50 RBIs. They're also bringing back Braden Burris, who was the how did everybody miss on this guy last year? Walk on. He
That
ended up
guy
going.
was incredible, man. He was
Yeah, he
incredible.
launching nukes.
He hits 389 with an OPS of 986, 82 hits, 33 RBIs, stole 18 bags on top of that. Also going to bring back Braxton Trammell. He hit 345 as a switch hitting freshman before he was injured in April of last year. So again, they didn't really have him for a full season. They're also going to bring back Alex Boshier, who was a power hitting shortstop at Old Dominion. And he was first season at DCU last year. He's going to come back and being part of this lineup. They're going to be stacked. They're stacked in the infield. I think, and that's going to be noted because Braden Burris, I think, played every game at second last season. He's listed as an infielder slash outfielder this year. So maybe there's a chance that they're trying to find some ways to get some flexibility in the infield. Also brought in some newcomers, one we're familiar with, Carlos Hakame, made the transfer from USF. He was a 300 hitter for us. But as I talked about with the infielders, I mean, Braxton Trammell's an infielder, Alex Boche is an infielder, Braden Burris is an infielder, Alex Irby's an or Austin Irby's an infielder. I don't know where he's going to fit in. And at the point that we're pushing Braden Burris to the outfield, I'm not sure. Again, that's not trying to throw shade there, but this is a stacked lineup with a lot of good infielders. I don't know where he fits in. On the pitching side, they're bringing back Ethan Norby, who did nothing but strike out 119 batters last season, including a 19 strikeout performance against Coastal Carolina, who went on to play for the College World Series.
Good Lord.
He put us out of the tournament too.
Yeah, just an absolute stud they're going to bring back. He's getting some national recognition, but they're bringing back guys behind him. Sean Jenkins is slated to be their Saturday guy. He made 12 starts for them, so he's bringing back a lot of experience. They also have oh, where's this? Colby Wallace is a two-way player. I think he's going to find that he's listed also as an infielder. Not sure what he's going to do infield wise, but he they're slated for him to maybe get some appearances. It's really going to come down to that Sunday spot. They've got Colby Wallace that I mentioned is going to compete for it. They've got a really good freshman that I couldn't find his name. I found out about him late through a D1, I'm sorry, 11.7 podcast.
I think
I
I got
wasn't
that
able to.
name. Grady Lenihan is a D1 baseball's pick for American Freshman of the Year.
Okay.
True five tool talent who looks like he's could step into the everyday center fielder job this spring. He's 5'10", but stands off for his power and speed combo.
There.
Yeah.
Rich get richer on that one. But yeah, in that Sunday rule, they're gonna have Colby Wallace, who's gonna compete with the corn fed guy I was gonna bring up, Gavin Van Campen, who comes from West Virginia, 6'7", 240. West Virginia tried him as a starter and a reliever, was a bit shaky on the mound, kind of found his way at the bullpen. You kind of see him as a big, lanky, big fastball kind of guy. He's either going to slot in that Sunday spot or they're going to find a really good spot for him in the back end of that rotation, or I'm sorry, the back end of that bullpen, and he's not going to be fun to face with the game on the line. All that said, I think the roster is very strong. There's not many holes. They're going to need some guys to really step up if they want to really meet the goals that they're trying to meet. Again, they got different goals, right, than a lot of teams in our conference. Their goal is to, they expect to make a regional, I think. And that's something that the rest of us are really, we have to earn that right. And I think ECU has earned that right. 11 seasons, 9 tournaments. They expect to make a regional at this point. They expect to win that at this point. They want to be in super regionals and they want to break through and do that. I think they got a roster to do it. I also think they've got a schedule to do it because they're going to get midweeks against Troy, who could be a really good Sun Belt team. We just talked about that. They got two midweeks against Duke, which is a super regional team from last season. They may have been in Omaha. I can't remember if they won or not. But again, they were knocking on the door of Omaha. They're a team that's going to knock on the door of Omaha again this season. They got two midweeks against NC State as well. And they got, go ahead.
What's like their weekend series look like for non-conference slate?
Yeah, they've got a weekend series against North Carolina and a weekend series against Coastal Carolina again this season. So they're going to have the non-conference schedule if they do well, that they could definitely be walking into the American Athletic Conference tournament. Not having to necessarily worry about winning it and not necessarily needing to be the top team. I think they could maybe slip up a little bit in conference, maybe come in as the 3 seed, and because of what they've done in the non-conference schedule, could still not necessarily be worried about making the tournament. I think for everyone else, we would need to be coming in as maybe the 1 seed to kind of have that to kind of have that comfort. But yeah, another interesting note, Parker Byrd returns for ECU. He had the tragic accident, or he lost, I believe, his right leg last season, got his first college hit, comes back this season. I'm sure Godwin's going to find ways to get him involved and get him in there. And so that's going to be something that's interesting to see as well. But
Didn't he get his first hit against us?
I don't think so.
I don't think it was
Was it?
against us, no. But
I don't think
we shared it in the group chat though, because it was a big
maybe
deal.
that's what it was, because
It was a big deal.
Highlighted.
I remember it happening. I thought it
Yeah.
happened in a non
I
in a
think it
non.
was non-conference. We sent it to each other. It was pretty sick.
Yeah.
Really awesome.
Well, look, they're the elephant in the room for everyone. I definitely think they're going to be the big stick that everybody's got to get over. But yeah, just a really, really good lineup that's going to have what we know is going to be a good Friday night guy and pretty decent projected guys behind him.
That feeling that when we were kids, when you're at the top of the hill in a roller coaster, you get that pit in your stomach and it's like awful, but like an anxiety provoking, right? That's the feeling that I got when probably our best research guy says, I couldn't find a single key loss for East.
No.
When you say that, and then you talk about Ethan Norby coming back, I mean, they could easily put up 10 plus a game, and then on the pitching end, give up less than three like consistently. It's that's scary.
Yeah, I think something changed. I think when ECU lost, who's that kid that went to Arkansas, the pitcher from last season? Zach Root. When they lost Zach Root to Arkansas, I think Cliff Godwin, like a light just went on in his head of like, oh, okay, like I gotta like really be in tune with the NIL transfer portal thing, because to keep all those players that they did, they must have something changed,
It really makes me
because
wonder because we questioned Godwin even last season because when they were going rough, he was making some comments and you wonder you didn't really know who they were to, and I'm thinking they were to administration, so this is where we are. Commit or what, it's going to be what it is, and
Exactly.
I think they
Some
committed. They didn't lose him.
something happened,
Dude,
because some money came in there.
I completely forgot about that, Adam. That's such a good point.
On that note though, we've covered every team in the AAC, and Bulls fans, you got to stay tuned, because next week we've got the man in charge of the program, head coach Mitch Hanes, is going to be on the show, and it's going to be a great conversation. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you follow all of our hosts on Twitter, X. I'll put everybody's handle in the show notes. Make sure that you follow the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We'll upload this one to YouTube as well. So like the video, subscribe to the channel. But thank you everybody for listening, and we're just really excited, because it is the beginning of what's going to be a good season.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Hey,
Go
boys.
Bulls. All right. Thank you, everybody. Go Bulls.
The Bulls.